So, I say we get going. Good morning. So, today we'll continue looking at caches. There are several cool principles I think we're gonna cover. So let's refresh a little bit what we went over last time. We started looking at the memory hierarchy. We spoke about how the processor interfaces with the memory via this this organized hierarchy. So the processor has the direct interface is the instruction cache, the instruction and the data memory, which we now learn that they are level one caches. This L1 instruction and data cache, and they are physically separate, but in the end they are backed by a level two cache, and then the level two cache is backed by an even larger level three cache, that is then backed by the main memory, the storage, and the rest of the system that is memory mapped. So we argued that the reason why we have this hierarchy is because we want to have the best of the two. We want both to have high performance and high capacity, high volume of data, high memory space, address space. So it turns out it's a physical limitation of the hardware itself. If we have a very large memory, the access time would be slow, and if we have a very fast memory, so access time very low, the capacity would be very small. So the way to balance this physical limitations is have the large memory, but then also have a small copy of it, the hot data, the one that you really want to use in the near time, right, in the temporal and spatial locality. So that's why we have a copy of the larger data as a cache, as a smaller data, smaller memory, physical memory. And the level one cache is very fast, is one clock cycle, but it's also very small. The level two might go over maybe two or three or four clock cycles, but it's somewhat larger. Level three is even larger. It's in the order of megabytes sometimes, right? And then main memory can be terabytes or gigabytes or hundreds of gigabytes. Then we learned about locality. We spoke about how if we access a value, there is a chance that we will be accessing that value again in the near future, and that's what temporal locality is. So in terms of time, we will be looking at those values that we are currently looking at. Perhaps there's a chance we're going to look at them soon again. So we might keep them close. And spatial locality, if we're looking at the value in an address, there's a good chance that we're going to look at values next to it, so neighboring values in the address. So that's what temporal and spatial locality was. And then we started looking at how do we actually implement this cache mechanism, right? We have a small copy of the larger memory, and it's a hierarchy of them, several small copies, right? So we looked at the first implementation, a direct mapped cache. And the goal was to map a small memory to a large memory. And we looked at how we can, we covered a couple of important concepts. There is the concept of having a set and a block. So we split the data, the large memory into blocks. And then we have this index for sets. So because it's a smaller, think of it as how many times does the small memory fit into the larger memory? Many, many times. And that's what that's what that set does, right? We kind of index which copy of the, or which fitting of the small memory into the large memory are we indexing? That's kind of what the set in the end does. We look at how the set has an index, and then the remaining bits are a tag. They are all part of the address, and they link to data, and then data that's in the cache is marked valid or not. So we have data in the cache that is just not valid, so that's just not there, not valid data. And then if there is valid data, then we can use it. And then we looked at how what's a read. Not we didn't look at write yet. We only looked at read, hits, and misses. So when we read and the value is in the cache, that's a hit. When we read and the value is not in the cache, we have to bring it from the memory into the cache, and that is what the miss is. So that's what we looked at last time. And we stopped. Well, before I move into the next topic, let's look a bit at the quiz. I think most of you did pretty well. There was one, I've seen a lot of people chose the answer 1.5 at question one. But the reason why this is 1.7 is different from what we saw last time in the class. The cost is actually 4 clock cycles. So previously we were inserting 2 clock cycles for the bubble, and in order to execute the operation, it would actually take 3. That's where that 3 came from. It was 2 plus 1. And in this problem, it was a 7-stage pipeline. So the problem text says that we are inserting 3 clock cycles. So the stall takes 3 clock cycles, so then the operation would take 4. And that's why we would have to do a 4 times 0.1 plus, and so on. So that was perhaps the one reason why this question was somewhat answered. But most of the other questions were answered quite good. I've seen around 80% of students did well. Do you have questions about question one? Go ahead.
So the question says, like, it needs like 3 more cycles. We need to add 1 to it for the total.
Yeah. Three cycles is the stall, and then 1 more is the total thing for the instruction. Last time we stopped at an example, or it was actually the next example, but this one also shows the same. So in this example, what was happening was we already read address 0, and it was in our cache, and it's in the cache with this index 00. This is the index bits. And then we read it again, but with a different tag. And when we did that, we overwrote our previous value. So first, we put into the memory this address 0 and 1. But then later, in the same location, we put 60 and 61. And then again later, we are trying to read 0 again. And because we overwrote it, we ended up in a miss. So this miss was caused because we had that conflict. And it somewhat breaks our temporal locality, right? We just used that value 0, at address 0. And now we would like to use it again, but we still didn't have it in the cache. So how can we, what would be a way to improve this? And one way to do that is to have, one more copy of this valid and tag and value. For example, if we have two of these tables, and they could be indexed with the same index, then that value 60 and 61, we could write it in here. We could store it in here in the cache. And if we do that, we would end up preserving that first address 0, value of at address 0, and then when we need it again, it's there. So that's like a motivation to the next subtopic. So what are the issues with direct mapped cache, what I've just showed? When we have a different tag, but the same index, so same set index, but we're reading a different tag, we're overwriting the previous value. And then when we need it again, it's not there anymore. We just overwrote it. So it breaks our temporal locality. The way we're going to try to solve this, is by adding what we call associativity. So what I just showed, drew one more table, that's what actually we are doing. We are we're making this a two-way set associative. So we have the same index, and now previously we had one block. Now in one set, we're gonna have two blocks. Well, I'll just mark this. Yeah, two blocks, and the valid bit is the block valid or not. So if we do this, well, it's really like twice larger, so you could think it's increasing the cache size by two. Well, what we could say is actually we're dividing the cache. We're keeping the cache size maybe the same, but we're just organizing it differently. So multiple places to put values. Okay, so the result is the advantage is that we have now multiple places where we can put values with the same index, and we avoid that specific type of conflict misses. And if we want to have three of them, we can have three or four or more. Of course, it comes at a cost in terms, and we will see that later. So set zero still is indexed by index, the same index, and now it will have two blocks in it. And we refer to this as ways. Questions so far? So associativity. So far we have two-way associative. And we refer to them as ways. Now I actually didn't know, is it way as a way to do, like method, or is it way as a lane, as a road? I think I see it as a road, I'm not sure. Charles, do you? I don't know. Two-way set associative. I see it as two lanes, and maybe in a very busy highway we might have more of that. Yeah. So maybe that's what it means, lanes in a road. In terms of the previous formula, so remember we had for a total number of bits, we called that M. The number of sets, capital S, is 2 to the power of S. It stays the same. The same formula applies. Really, none of these numbers, none of these formulas change. The number of blocks, the bytes in a block, the size of a block is the same. Same formula applies, 2 to the B, where B will be the offset bits. The tag number of bits for the tag will be the same relationship as before, M minus sum of S plus B. So far, not much changes. We just have two ways. Where we had only one, now we have two. That's really all we're doing. And let's really absorb this concept by going through an example. Let's see how the previous reads will now take place. For the first one, we are reading at index 0. Index 0 is right there. We're reading, at the beginning, there was nothing in there, and that's why it was a miss. But then we brought all that data in there, so we put the bits of the tag, which are those bits right there, we stored the tag bits in the table. And we brought those two values because it's a two-byte block. We brought byte 0 and byte 1. So that was the first operation. I was supposed to do this without looking forward. We are reading in the same index 0, same tag. Do we have that tag? Well, now we do. Now we have that tag, and it is valid. So we have a hit, and it's byte 1, which is this byte here, byte 1. So this is a hit. Next, what do we do next? We are reading from set with index 1. So we're going to be reading from here. Well, do we have anything in there? Well, there's nothing there. Nothing is valid, and there is no tag, so it will be a miss. What are we going to? What will we do? We will write this tag 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, and we will bring the two values. So 63 and 62, I think. 63? Yeah. So we'll bring memory at 62 and 63. So far, questions, issues? Are we on the same page? Okay. So next we are reading again index 0, so set 0. We're reading from this set. And the tag value is, well, it's not that one. And there is nothing in the other set, so it is a miss. But notice that now, instead of overwriting the way zero, instead of overwriting these values here, I can just use the second way, and I don't lose my current value. So I will do that. I will store this tag here, 011000. Yeah, I did correct. And then value 60 and 61. So and of course, I will mark that is now a valid data in the cache. Okay. What about next? We have index 1, so we will be reading from here, from this set, and tag is 011000, which matches that, and it's valid, so it seems like we have a hit, value 62. Indeed, it is there in the memory, so that is a hit. Questions so far? Finally, we read again byte 0, so we read it from index 0. Tag is all zeros, which we have in our cache, and we know that it's valid, and it's with index 0, so it's this byte 0, not byte 1, so we have a hit. So notice how we preserve the and we actually read that value in the cache at address 0. So we didn't overwrite it, and now we were able to read it. So it's pretty good. And last we have a miss. What is going on is we are again reading at index 0, this index here, and we're reading this tag 0111001, and we don't have, this is close, right? But it's not a one right there. So none of the tags match. Both are valid data, and they don't match. So we have a miss. And later we will look at how do we replace. We have to now fetch data from memory and write it into the cache. But which of the two ways do we override? We're going to have to come up with a replacement policy. That's what we will call a replacement policy. We'll speak about that in the next slides. Okay. So in terms of circuit or a mechanism of how does this work, so previously we had just one lane. We've seen in the last lecture that we had just this one way. I'll try to call it way. First we look at the index bit. The index bit, you know, stays the same and it applies to both ways. And then from the index we can retrieve our valid and our tag from the cache, right? And the data. And the same from the other way. So we retrieve this information. At the same time, in the address, we have the tag right here. So we have to compare first, are we looking at valid data? That's what this and does. If this is a zero, then and with anything zero, it's a zero, right? So these ones will actually, and both of them can be one. These ones will be important, will apply, the value will be used at this and here as well. And then we have a comparator. Is this tag from the cache table the same as the tag from the address? This is what this equal does. Similarly here, that's what that equal does. And if that's true, then we get another one, and only one of them will be true. So in this case, we have 1, 1, and 1, 1. The other one is not 1, 1, right? That's because that's how we make our cache work. Only one of them will be true. Or none of them will be true. If it's a cache miss, none of them will be true. The tags will just not match. One of them is true, so if it's a hit, we can do an XOR between 1 and 0, or 0 and 1. That's what this XOR does, and we determine, is it a hit or not? Similarly, the data that we are passing out from the cache can be controlled by this one of these AND signals. So this is a multiplexer, and that's the data. Which data do we pass forward, either from lane 1 or from lane 0? And then there's a demultiplexer, and that's which byte do we actually take, right? We want a specific byte, we can do that using the offset as the control to the demux. Yeah?
Why is this faster than doing larger sets? Like in the example before, if we just did larger sets to get the same result and store everything in the cache, why would this way be
easier? Larger sets? So why is this faster than larger? Do you mean
a single cache?
A single lane. A single way, sorry. So it's faster because we don't overwrite those values. We looked at that example where we read value 0, and then we read value 64. So you see like the way the cache maps into the physical address. You have 0, 64, 128. If you want to read value 0, and then 64, and then 128, and so on, you're always going to be using set 0, the index 0. This index will always be 0. So you will always be using only one row in the cache, just this one. You will always be overwriting that data. And that means you're always losing the previous value. You see? Yeah, that's just the way the cache mechanism works, right? We have this index bits that map to the physical, because you see, we ignore the offset, because it's a block. So the whole block, we're fetching it from the cache, and the index, the set index, is what maps it onto the physical memory. Yeah, let me try to actually make a long physical memory. So we want to have very fast access to this large memory address by having only a very small memory, right, the cache. And how would you map it? You could say, well, I'm just going to put sometimes this will be my memory, you know, sometimes that. You know, that's one way to do it, right? But now, that means that this row is always that row. And then the second row is maybe always that row. But that also means that this row, right here, maybe I should use a different color. So this row and this row and this row, if we keep reading those rows, we are always overwriting. We're always only using this one region in the cache. And if you have now a different organization where, well, I want to make it smaller, where your cache, cut it in half and put it side by side, then One time you read the row in this first way, that we call it a way, right? That's way zero and way one. And then the second time, you will put it there. And now you have both ways. If you need way zero, if you need that row, the first one, again, you have it. That's the only really gain when we add this associativity. Yeah.
Could you go back to the slide, the previous slide?
Sorry. I think I'm going in the wrong direction. Yeah.
Will the, when we're overwriting, or when we're writing to the cache, will it always start at way zero and then way one?
Let's say yes. Why not? Will it always start at way zero? We're going to look next at a replacement policy, and there will be a mechanism that enforces a specific rule. But for now, let's say, yeah, sure. Go 0-1, and then, yeah. Okay. So, the next slides, they speak about this blocks that I've been highlighting so far. Are questions about this mechanism? Well, so in terms of how many options are there, really these three for associativity. So if none of the blocks for the index are valid, then it's a miss, right? Our index, there's no valid data in it, so it's a miss. Alternatively, none of the valid blocks for the index match the tag. So we have valid data in the index, in the set, in our ways, but the tags are different. That's also a miss. The tag is just not there in the cache. So something else is stored there. And then the third, one and only one of the blocks for the index is valid and matches the tag, and that is a hit. So a hit is when the data is valid and the tag matches. And some more terminology. So we looked at the direct map, and then we looked at associativity, and we looked at two-way associative, but it can be three-way, four-way associative, E-way. And that E is a number of blocks per set. E is ways in the cache. And direct map is really a special case of that, where E equals to one. We only have one way. And then the other extreme is when we have fully associative. So can we go all the way to infinity? What's our limit? Because I actually was also puzzled by that. What's our limit? How far can we go? Yeah?
Is it C over B?
C over B. Possible. The way I think of it is that we will only have one set. Remember how our cache went from and now it will maybe go into three, so even less, fewer blocks. So eventually we're just going to have only one set with many, many ways in it. Or not that many, but some number of ways. That will be fully associative. So the limit is when the number of bits for the index is actually zero. So we have only one set. So we only have tag and offset. There is no index bit. There's no bits for the index. That's when it's fully associative. So we only compare the address tag. That's actually the downside. Like when we have fully associative, we have to compare the tag in the address to every single block. So page up. So here we have two ways, and we have how many comparators? Well, there is this equal, and there is this other equal. If we have fully associative, we're going to have a lot of these equals. So the tag will have to be compared with every single block. So a lot of comparators. So more circuit on the die. So finally, this is the last slide with all these formulas, and the The best way to memorize these formulas or to understand these formulas is actually to understand where they come from, they're very helpful even so. Most of the formulas stay the same. Memory address bits, number of blocks per set, so that's our ways, then number of sets and index bits, where S comes from right there. Similarly, block size, and then B comes from right there. Then how many bits for the tag, as before, nothing changes. One thing that changes is that our cache size is now expressed as block size times number of sets times weights. You can determine the number of sets by doing the math, right? So C divided by B times B. So here is an example and an exercise. In a desktop, you might see that there is 32 kilobytes, and that's kilo, so that's 2 to the 10 kilobytes of level 1 data cache. It's organized as 8 blocks per set, so it's 8 ways, and each block is 64 bytes. Notice that all the caches here are 64 bytes. It's quite convenient. If level 1 cache speaks to level 2, level 2 speaks to level 3, they always change a 64-byte word or amount of data, packet of data, which is quite convenient, right? And actually, to go a bit into the details of RAM, of main memory, when you write to main memory, it's 64 bits in a burst of 8, so it's also 64 bytes. This 64-byte aspect goes even further to main memory. To DDR4 or DDR5, the same block size stands. But that, I digress. Level 2 cache in this case is 256 kilobytes. Again, 2 to the 10. That was supposed to be a 10. And 256 is what? 2 to the 8, I believe. And we have 4 blocks per set, so 4-way associative. And for level 3, we have 8 megabytes, which is 2 to the 20 megabytes. 16 blocks per set, so 16-way associative. The first question, let's just do L1. How many bits will we have for the index, for the offset, and for the tag? And then in this, for this address, which bits will be the tag, the index, and the offset? That's the exercise. Take a few minutes. Try to exercise a bit.
In the example before, we had associativity. Is that considered one way and one block per set, or is that considered two blocks per set?
Two blocks. It's the number of ways. 8 blocks per set, so there's one set, and there's 8 blocks, so it's 8 ways. Yeah? Oh. So, one set, this is one set, and block 1, block 2, right, and way 1, way 2. So there is 2 to the 5 times 2 to the 10 bytes. Okay? 32 kilobytes equals 2 to the 10 is 1024. Would you like more time? we try to go through it together? Let's go through it. So how many bits are for the offset? Let's start with the offset. It's the easiest. 4 bits, 5 bits, 6 bits, 7 bits, 6 bits, 7, 6, 4. So how do we compute that? Number of bytes in a block, so size of the block. So that is this B, right? And it's, in our case, 64. So B is 64, and 2 to the power of B, well, equals to that. So B will be 6. Questions about this? So offset bits comes from the block size, and there are bytes inside the block, and the offset is the address of the byte inside the block. That's the easiest way to think of it. And then, well, to get the tag, we need S first, right? So the index, the number of bits for the index. How can we get that? Let's see. So where we did this, we figured out that B is 6. And we know a few things. We know that we have a 8-way associative cache, and that our capacity is 32 kilobytes, and the capacity is what? It's, our cache. We have eight ways, right? So I'll split it into. So these are all ways 0 to way 7. Each of them has sets. Well, the same sets. And there are some indexes here, right? And we call that set index. And these are blocks, right? So this is like one block that we know is 64 bytes. So that's how that that size comes up. A number of ways, so that's this, times number of sets, which is this height, right? And then size of each block, which would be like the size of the block itself, another area inside the area. All right, so we can get the number of sets as our capacity divided by E times B, which is what? The capacity is 32, so it's 2 to the 5 times 2 to the 10 bytes. And then our E is 8, which is 2 to the 3. And E doesn't have to be a binary, right? E can be, doesn't have to be 2 power of, no, doesn't have to be under the 2 power of something. It can be 3 or 4 or 5 or 6. But in this case, it's 8, so it's 2 to the 3. Just write a nice 3. And for B, we know that it's 2 to the 6. So that will give us that we have 64 sets as well. And if we do a log of that, we get that for index, we get 6 bits. So then we do that difference, right? So we have 6 bits for the offset. We have also 6 for the index. And then the rest remaining is the tag bits. Yeah?
Why did you keep interpreting 2 to the 15 as 2 to the 5 times 2 to the 10?
just was lazy to add the two. Yeah, it's 2015. Yeah. I thought that keeping them separate would just make it simpler or more clear. Yeah. So in this case, so our question was about the bits of this address. So we discovered that the first six are offset. So that would be offset. Then the next six will be our index, the set index, and then all the rest are the tag.
For L1, the number of index bits, don't you take it from the number of sets? And isn't there 8 sets? So wouldn't it be 2 to the 3 and 3 bits? So where'd you get the 6 bits?
I see. It's not 8 sets, it's 8 ways. Here, you mean this number 8?
Yeah.
That 8 is 8 ways per set. But then the number of sets is, we have that relationship where we take the total size of the cache and we divide it by size of the block, number of ways per set. What else was there? Number of blocks, I think. So that's how we find out number of sets, and it turns out we have 64 sets. And 64 sets, we index them with 5 bits, 6 bits, 2 to the 6. Yeah. Okay, and then in the next slides, it's what we just did. So there is that address, and bits 0 to 5, so the first 6 bits are the offset bits, and then 6 to 11 are the bits 6 to 11 would be our index, and then the remaining would be the tag. And that, and there's level 2, and then there's level 3, and we can look at that. We can look at that later. Now, previously we spoke about, let's switch to replacement policy. Previously we looked at how, when we load this next value, we had this one slide. Just a few slides earlier. When we load this value, and let's go through it again. We are looking at, so it's index 0 and 1, and the offset, so this one would be the offset, just 1 bit, and then this would be the index. And it's index 0, so we're writing to the set 0, and we have 2 ways. And our tag is 011001. And we don't have that. We have something similar to it, 011000, but we don't have 001. So it's a miss. And now we have to bring this data from the memory. And we have to put it in our set 0. We can't just put it somewhere else. No, oh, there's a free amount, free space here. Well, that's not how the cache works. There's order in where data goes in the cache, and it has to go in set 0, right? That's how we agreed to construct that circuit. We have two options. We can override the way 0, or we can override the way 1 value. And that is what we have to basically replace, and we have to decide which one. So we have to have a rule, an algorithm, to decide which value do we replace. One option is to track which block was read least recently. So not just now, sometime. Basically, what's the older value? Replace that one. Just to keep with this temporal locality, right? And the idea here would be, you know, we would have a flag, just a 1-bit, a 1 or a 0, and it's quite convenient, right? We have 2 ways. Way 0 and way 1, and we can say, okay, the least recently used is the way 1. So then we will replace that one. And when we replace it, then we say, well, the now the least recently used is the weight zero. So we always update it. So that would be the one way to do it. Other ways, other methods. So this is one method. What do you think would be maybe other good ways?
We're writing just randomly.
Randomly, yeah. We could just randomly pick a value. We could have a counter. So if we have many, we could have a counter. Or we could have a FIFO, so just a first in, first out, which is similar to least recently used. Now, it works really well when it's just two ways, because we only need one bit. But what if we have N-way, so fully associative, or many other, N-way, so some other number, or all the way to fully associative? Well, then what do we do? You know, here is just 1 and 0, but in that case, if we have, say, n ways, then which one is the least recently used? So we have to update that, update it, so maybe the current one would become not the recently used, but then we have to find which one it is. It basically, you see, even thinking about it is complicated. But then try to actually implement this in hardware. You need to keep track of the order. That's the idea, right? And then to sort it or to find the smaller one and then to add one to each of them, too much work. So implementing that in hardware would be costly and not so nice. That's why least recently used is great for two-way set associative. Doesn't really scale that easily to, or it's costlier to have for a higher level of associativity. We mentioned other examples. Least recently used takes advantage of temporal locality. We looked at one example, and we need, if we have E ways, we need that many bits, log 2 of E bits to store the value. But we can also have a more approximate version of it. We don't really need to be that exact. It's not as much as which way was the least recently used. It's more of a avoid the recently used. So it's like the other way around. Right? Just don't override the most recent or the few most recent. So we can be more approximate. And if we do that, you know, we can have a simpler circuit. We spoke about first in, first out. We also spoke about random or pseudo-random, like using a linear feedback shift register. The advantage here is that the circuit is very small. LFSR is just a shift of the bit, and then I think an XOR as well. So it actually works really well in practice. So the performance is pretty good because sometimes it's in your detriment, but it's random. So some other times it's actually in your advantage. You might get lucky with this random, but you also might just get not lucky, and it actually does quite well. So it's a very compact yet effective replacement policy. Going from read, so we looked at read so far. And write is not that much more different, but there are a couple of interesting nuances. So let's look at write. And first, let's look at this concept, write through versus write back. Think of it as write through, you would write to level 1 cache, the level 1 will write to level 2, level 2 will write to level 3, and so on all the way to memory, while write back is perhaps an optimization. Let's look first at what happens when we do a write through. So the CPU issues, step 1 here, we issue a write value 10 into address ABCD. And currently there is an FF, both in the cache and in the main memory. And you could think of some layers in between, level 2 cache or level 3, right? That value would be consistent throughout, F and F, but that's not complicated with those. Next, If we go with this policy right through, then we write the value in the cache, we put that 10 in the cache, and then the cache and memory controller will actually execute this write 10 into the memory. So we'll have value 10 at address A, B, C, D. Now the somewhat problem with this is that, you know, we always have to write to the memory as well, and that might come at a cost. Imagine every time you're writing to the cache, you're also writing to the memory. Maybe sometimes that value will be soon overwritten, and you just wrote to the memory, but that value was overwritten. Now you have to write something on top. So you do work that maybe is not so meaningful. So that's maybe one problem. And memory write, you're occupying this bandwidth, so you're utilizing bandwidth, you're consuming bandwidth between cache and RAM, and that bandwidth is actually quite a bottleneck for many applications. But another one is it's power expensive, power intensive. A lot of the cloud computing or, you know, data centers or your phone, right, your mobile applications, you care about power. You want your battery to last long. So writing a lot of times to the RAM is actually a lot of power. So that's another reason why you don't really want to do that. That's why there is another way. So let's look at this other option. We call it write back. And in this case, when we write the value 10, we simply mark it as dirty with one bit. That value was modified in the cache, and it's dirty. And what that means is, what really that means in the end is that that value in the cache is now different, is updated, but it was not updated in the RAM, in the main memory. So that's why we mean it's dirty. And when eventually we will do the write back, and when we do, we will mark it back as not dirty. So the bit dirty will be set back to zero. So let's look at that. We wrote value 10 into the cache at address ABCD. We did not write it yet into the RAM, but now the CPU issues a different command, the second command, and the command is read from address 11CD, from this address, 11CD. And notice CDs, or both C and D, they match, so that's a hint that the set index is the same. So the idea is that we are actually reading, and it so happens that we have to overwrite, it's a cache miss, and we have to overwrite that value at ABCD in the cache, this block of data. Now when we do that, we can't just, that value is necessary. If we simply overwrite it, then we lose that value because it's not yet in the RAM. So before we overwrite it, we have to first write that value 10 to the RAM, and then we can overwrite. So the step four is read from read back from 11CD into the cache. I know this might be a bit confusing, but you have questions? I could go again. Oh, okay.
Why is write back better than write?
Yeah. So I was saying that when you do write through, you always write every single time. Every single time you write to the cache, the value also is written to the memory. So the CPU writes to the cache. Oh, wait, I have to write to the memory. Again, write to the cache. Oh, I have to write to the memory. Now, a lot of the times when you write to the cache, you will overwrite the value. So you write a 10 and then a 15 in the same location. So you didn't really use the 10. Or maybe you read it and then wrote it back. You know? So there is a lot of the times values are used just between the CPU and the cache, and they don't really need to go to the memory.
And you just put the final value back into
the memory. Yeah, you could say that. You could say that. Or you want to save some of these writes. Yeah, you could eliminate some of these writes. But eventually you have to, eventually there will be a cache miss. So what this example does is, initially you had value 10 in that address, but now you're reading from a different address, 11CD. That you're trying to read values from 11CD, and 11CD is not in the cache. It's supposed to be in the same set, but you know, we have a different value in that set. So we have to bring 11CD from the RAM into the cache exactly there in that set, in that block. So we have to overwrite. But we can't overwrite. If we do, we have a data hazard. We just lost that value 10 forever. You know, if it was never in the RAM and we were overwriting. So before we overwrite, we have to do that step. Write that 10 to ABCD and then read 42 from 11CD in there. Yes, please. Yes, and they are set to zero when we do this. When we do this, write 10 to ABCD, meaning that value 10, we wrote it into the memory. So then we set it back to zero. Yeah. Okay, I think we have a few examples that will show the details in more detail. write back policy. Let's see what's going on here. So we wrote values 60 and 61, and we marked it as dirty. So we know that value is different than what we have in memory. And if we have to evict it, we have to write it into the memory first. Now, this is something I'll go through really quick. A processor doesn't write always the whole block. Maybe it only writes one byte. So there are two ways to think of it. It doesn't write the whole cache block. So if the block is not yet in the cache, we have two options. The easy or the not very involved one is just don't use the cache. We want to write to the cache, but the block is not there, just write it directly into the memory. But then we are kind of hoping that we will not need that value soon. That's when that makes sense. Processor writes to the memory directly. Another option is with this write allocate, which is what we were looking at. But we first have to fetch the cache block so that the cache block, which was not in, we have a miss, right? We want to write, but the block is not in the cache. So we fetch the cache block from the memory, and then we write only the byte that the processor wants to write, and we mark it as dirty. And then it's in the cache, and we can read it if we need it. So that's the difference between write allocate and write no allocate. So writing F, and this is write allocate, writing F into address 4, so this is index 0, tag 001, that's not tag 001, that's also not tag 001, so it looks like we have a miss. So what do we have to do? Step 1, we have to find the least recently used block, that's our LRU. That's our replacement policy, and then we will. And it says that it's way one, which is this one, right? This is way one. Oh, I was thinking of zero. Way zero is that one. So we are going to be replacing the value here, in way one and the tag. But first, we have to fetch from memory. So first we have to see, is this dirty? That's actually the very important part, right? So here we have all the complications squeezed together. So first we look at what do we replace? And then next, this block that we want to replace, is it dirty? If it's dirty, then we have to write it back. Otherwise, we lose it completely, right? And in this case, it is dirty. So then we have to write back this block into the memory. How? And then after we wrote it back, we can read the new block and update that it's not the least. Now the least recently used is this way zero. Okay, we update that. And that seems to be it. And well, we have now the value from memory, and we can write into it the value we want. So we want to write FF at that address. We have the 5, the whole block actually, and the 4 and the 5 is there. And they're together. So we have the whole block. We can change the value of address 4 to FF. I wasn't the most fluent here. Questions? And with no allocate, we don't bother, right? Do we have this set F with the tag? Do we have it in memory in the cache? No, it's not in the cache. We decided that in the previous slide. So just write it directly to memory. That's what the no allocate does. So the previous one is a little more work, right? First we look at the least recently used, then we look at the dirty, we might have to do a write back to memory to write the old value from the cache into the memory, and then bring that block, the new one, into the cache, and then update. So a bunch of steps. But it's worth it. If we need that value to be read it again, it's worth it. And if we don't need it, then maybe it's better to do write no allocate, just write it directly to memory, and then we won't have it in cache at all. How many of you heard of a state machine? Yeah, great. This is from a different book, a cache controller, a state machine for a cache controller. So. A cache would usually be in the idle state until a CPU request arrives to the cache. The first things to do is to compare the tag and the tag in the index, so in the set index, and if it's valid, if the tag is there and it's valid, then we have a hit, and if it's a hit, then we can just stay in this state and do read or do write. It's all good. If we're doing a write, then we are setting the dirty bit, assuming that we're doing the not the write through. We are doing the other one. And then, if we have to do a write back, so if we have a miss and the old block is dirty, then we have to do a write back. So we write back the old block to memory. And we leave this state, we stay in this state until we, are done with the memory part, and we leave when memory says it's okay. And we leave not back into compare tag, we leave into this allocate, where we bring that new block from the memory. And now we're ready. So basically, this is the state machine of a cache controller that when we're in a hit, we don't have to do much. When we're in a miss state, either we have to just do this allocate, so read the new block from memory and then go back. Or if we have to do a write back, first we do a write back and then we do an allocate. If you ever want to implement a cache state machine or a cache controller, this state machine I hope will be useful. So here is an exercise, and we have this two-way set associative cache with the least recently used replacement policy with write allocate and write back. Not write through, write back, right? So for each of the following accesses performed alone, would it require A, reading a value from memory or next level of cache, B, writing a value to the memory or next level of cache? So let's look at the first one. Writing one byte to 0.33. We have on maybe, well, we have another 10 minutes. So we don't have that value, right? We have 30, 31. Oh, actually, there is 33. So writing one byte to 0.33. We know that it's in our cache. The tag is valid. It is dirty, but we don't really care. This is write allocate and write back. So in this case, I think we don't have to do, I'm afraid I might be wrong. Yeah, we don't have to do anything. No read, no write. Yeah, so the value is there, memory 33. We are writing it. And I believe we're gonna have to set this now to be zero. Then next, reading one byte from 52. Yes. Why did we change the dirty bit to zero? So you're right, right? Technically, we are writing to the cache. We are not doing a write through, so we don't push the data. We don't synchronize with the memory. So it should stay dirty, right? I agree with you. Yeah. I think it stays dirty. Charles, do you, can you please help us? Do you know why this bit one was switched to zero? Since we're writing to, huh? Oh, okay. Okay, yes. Yeah, I was also. Then reading one byte from 52, where would 52 be? I am actually, I just don't know exactly the index of 52, right? Reading one byte from 52. Well, looking at the cache, now everything is valid, right? All of it. So 52 is not in our cache. Looking at all the addresses, it's just not there. So this is definitely a miss. So for sure, we will have to read back. Now, will 52 happen to maybe be in one of these? If 52 happens to be and actually it's not in one of those, right? Because this is zero and that's also zero. The least recently used, so it would actually go in one of these other ones. So I think for 52, we'll just have to do a read from memory. I'm sure I missed something. Oh. So there was nothing in the cache, or? So if we are going to be writing 52 in this set, and that is a dirty, then we have to first write it back to the memory, and then we can fetch, so we can read the value.
Exactly. But if you attach it for the LRU update in the first access, which the question tries to tell you not to, then indeed you find out, oh, those are not.
Yeah. We are out of time, so thank you guys. Thank you very much. Let me stop the. Okay, go ahead.
What is the use of like right now and right now after? Like what does it use?
So the processor only modifies a few bytes, right? The block is 64 bytes, right? The processor might modify just one of them. And you might need it in the future, you might not need it, we don't know. So if you don't need it, it's best to just write it directly to memory. Don't put it in your cache. You know, if you already have the block in the cache, it doesn't cost too much. It's already there, just put it in the cache, no problem. But if the block is not in the cache, then what are your options? You know, you're in a miss state. You're writing, but the block is not in the cache. Do you write it in the cache, or do you want to write it directly in the memory? That's really the whole thing, right?
Okay, so like, because it will be costly to, you know, update a whole block.
Yeah, it is. Think about it. If you want to write it in the cache, you don't have it there. So first you have to bring it from the memory, and then to modify the value of maybe just a little bit of it, or 1 byte or 2 bytes. And then eventually you will probably write it back. So it's going to end up in memory anyway. But the advantage of write allocate is that if you need that value soon, it's in the cache. So you can read it again. You can reuse it many times. So if you think you're going to reuse it, then better do it. You know, have it in the cache. So do the write allocate. If you think you're not going to use it, then don't do that. Just write it back to the memory.
Yeah, no, that's definitely.
I think that's that.
Yeah. If you're just going to write stuff and operate it for a while, then write through is the wrong.
I was doing the correct.